Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our Week in Reviews series, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the literary world. My guest today is author Patrick Davis. Patrick has just released a tour de force book, The Silent Note. This is a book that contains some powerful and not unlikely ideas. An old piano is bought at auction, and the new owners discover a small box inside it containing some letters dated between 1915 and, I think, 1917. The letters reveal an entirely different world. They concern a romance, but it's a romance of the type that we in the internet world can hardly understand. There's also a mystery tied up in these letters between two young lovers. Hello, Patrick, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Simon. Thank you very much.
Let me start at the end. I love The Silent Note. What a great book.
Well, thank you very much.
Are you getting some positive feedback about it?
Yes, I am. Actually, in my local community, there's a number of quite a few people actually. Many of them told me that they totally enjoyed the story. They had a hard time looking at me. Well, some of them are some friends of mine, but several quite a number of people, they don't know me, but I did meet them, and they totally enjoyed the story. They said that. That they're fascinated with the romance of the turn of the century era, then especially with the mystery, and it's the story's conclusion, and they just totally love the story. Half of these people said that they want to see the movie when it comes out, but we'll see what happens. That's a dream of mine, of course. But anyways, not to elaborate too long. Everyone who has read The Silent Note totally loved the story.
I actually think that it would translate very well to the silver screen. I think the story is so captivating. It would make a wonderful, wonderful movie. So I would suggest that you do punt it around. I mean, Hollywood's not that far away from Poway.
Right, right. Uh-huh. Only about an hour and a half drive. If that were to happen, that would be great, you know.
So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? What's your background?
Well, my background is from early adult life. I've always wanted to be a writer, but I didn't take it really seriously. During my several years of college, I went to junior college, and I took film, and I wanted to go into movie making at that time. This is the early 1980s, and after several years of studying film, my life seemed to take a turn. Several courses of events changed, and so I had to leave my dreams of film behind, and I went and I started to work for Sony Corporation, and so I was pretty much into electronics industry, and I earned a really neat career as a engineering technician for Sony Corporation. But I always thought about that movie I was supposed to make, or that novel I was supposed to write, and so these are things that just lingered in the back of my mind while I was working hard for the electronics industry, and I was making Sony televisions at the time, And so that was a long span of my life, 26 years.
Right. How long did it take you to actually put together the silent note from start to store shelf, shall we say?
Start to store shelf, I would have was actually about 11 years. It first started in 1996, and that's when I first began taking notes, and then I began making drafts in early 1997. After going through several editors, one of the San Diego's independent book reviewer, the story underwent. Now the story center idea had not changed, but the story underwent 9 drafts and greatly edited a lot. And then so after 11 years, the publishing process, that's when it came out onto the internet and all the .coms.
This clearly is a labor of love.
Very much so. In fact, in 2004, every day after work, I would come home, eat, relax for about 30 minutes. Then I would grab my cup of coffee, turn on my computer, and I would enter into the world of John Wiseman and his daughter Melissa, or into the world of Elsa Thompson and Grant Ford. And I would I felt like that as I was drafting the world. I was a god of their world, by the way, and I was creating their lives, their characters. But all the while, I felt like I was sitting in front of the big screen watching this all happen. And I just really enjoyed that. I just enjoyed writing this story.
Right. Did you know how it was going to end when you started writing?
That's a very interesting question. When this thought had crossed my mind, I saw the whole story beginning to end. It was like watching a 2.5-hour movie within 3 seconds. I saw the whole story after I was searching for a piano's manufacturing date with this old piano that I happened to acquire. And when I saw the whole story, then I had a story to write, but I saw from beginning to end.
Wow, I'm amazed. I am not a published author, but I do write lots and lots of articles, and I can honestly say that, you know, it more often than not, I sit down, my fingers start hitting the keys, and I don't know where it's going to lead.
Right. Well, that is so true with many stories that are on the bookshelf now. They start, but then somewhere between, sometime after chapter 10, you're not sure what's next turn, and that's just the nature of it.
Right. In fact, there's one of my most unfavorite authors is very well known. He slips my mind right now. He's so well known. But he has this horrible habit of writing 2/3 of a great book. Oh, Robert Ludlum, that's the gentleman. And you get to about page 160. You turn the page and you go, huh? Where did that come from?
right. Uh-huh.
You know, complete lack of fluidity.
Right.
I was warned before I read The Silent Note that it, some might label it as chick lit. Now, I have to admit, I've obviously read the book, and I don't buy into that idea. Yes, it's written with a great deal of sensitivity and feeling, but this is hardly Harlequin pulp stuff. Have you had any feedback on this chiclet aspect?
Well, actually, you know, to tell you the truth, I was very surprised several weeks ago. Actually, this is probably in early January, when I saw some of the results of the blog tour saying that the book was labeled at that. And I was very surprised. I actually even laughed because I thought, you know, that, well, I would consider a Legally Blonde, you know, the young lady who at first wrote in that book before it became a movie. You know, of course, that story is of that genre, but regarding my story, I was surprised and I laughed about it because I thought it was kind of funny to think of it being labeled such as that.
Right. Where did the idea for the silent note originate from?
Okay. Again, I always wanted to be a writer from early adult life, but I lacked a story. But one of the several factors was number one, I love the turn of the century era. I was always drawn to the era of time. Secondly, I had a passion for America's Industrial Revolution because the history during that era of time between the 1880s and 1920 is just fascinating to say the very least. And in the early 1990s, I had acquired this old piano. And now, of course, I'm not a antique collector, but I've always liked old relics because I've always wondered who were the original owners, you know. So after I had acquired this piano, it was basically the centerpiece of my living room. And one day I had handcrafted this keepsake box for my wife, and so my wife took it and she displayed it on top of the piano. And so several years, you know, passed, and I keep on wondering, how old is this instrument? And so I decided to open up the top door in the bottom compartment of the piano, and I took a flashlight, and it was very full of dust. And I searched for a manufacturer's date. Now I found a nameplate. I found some stamp numbers and some markings, but after three or four attempts, I could not find a manufacturer's date. While I sat there trying to figure out why didn't the manufacturers put a date in here, all of a sudden, I thought, what if this keepsake box was locked in the lower door of this piano and I went undetected for about 70 or 80 years, and all of a sudden I saw this story flash before my mind, like I mentioned earlier. I saw the whole story beginning to end, and I knew I had my story. I had got up, I closed up the piano, I got paper out, and I began penning. Elsa, this is going to be kind of funny, but did you ever see the movie Born Free? Came out, I believe, in 1967.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. My parents took my sibling brothers and sisters, and so we saw Born Free at the drive-in theater. In the story, the movie, there was a lion and a lioness, and the lioness was named Elsa. And at 7 years old, when I left the movie theater, I thought, wow, what a pretty name. And so this name, Elsa, just could never be silenced. So it just sat in the back of my mind for all these years. Well, when I landed my story, you know, when I was closing up the piano, I thought, I'm going to have to create this woman. She's a lady in the story. Her name is going to be Elsa. And all this interest that I had with the turn of the century era and America's Industrial Revolution, that's going to have to be put into the story. So I wanted to use America's Industrial Revolution as a backdrop for this romance story. And that night, I began taking notes, and then early in 1997, I went full force. I began to do a lot of study on Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla, and just the just everything involved. And then at the same time, I'm creating the world of Elsa Thompson Grant Ford. But I was running into difficulty about the language of the era. And so I basically stopped with Elsa Thompson Grant Ford, and I began to write most of the John Wiseman story, because that's the present-day story, and I know the language very well. After I had completed most, basically all that story, I did extensive research on the language of the era, because the language of the era, I had to study the social graces and the etiquette of letter writing and the etiquette of just everyday day behavior with the people of that era, especially the affluent folk.
Right.
And so then just all this studying and books I ordered online, books I bought from the bookstore, and videotapes that I watched, and it was just beginning to fill me. And it was just all very interesting. But as far as the letters, let me tell you something about the letters. There was a woman. Her name is Candy Carley. She's a performance artist, and she lives in Connecticut. She came out to San Diego, and her performances that she puts on, she's called the Victorian Lady, and she is very inspiring. She dresses up in a period clothing, and by the way, this is a vintage clothing or real clothing that had been preserved over the many years. But she gets into the elaborate details about the dress, the era, the language, and the etiquette of letter writing. So after her performance, I exchanged phone numbers and emails, and then I began to draw from her about the etiquette of letter writing, and then I began to put that into the persona of Elsa Thompson. And so Candy Carley actually was a great influence for me for the persona of Elsa.
Oh, I think you did a magnificent job with language in the letters.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, most of the letters are fairly short, but they convey so much information. It really is a different era, a different world. You mentioned that you are a history fan. Have you ever considered a nonfiction book?
My dad recently passed away, which is very sad. But
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay. You know what? I'm doing well, by the way, and. My dad and his brother and their father, they had a very interesting story throughout the Great Depression era.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stories that my dad thought, I thought, I have to write a book about that someday, because of struggles and the setbacks. And but my dad and his uncle, they came out fine, and they lived great lives. And I thought, if I ever write a nonfiction story, I need to think about that, because they just have some really, really interesting stories.
Yes, you don't have to be famous, you know, to have a story.
the other person now, if I was to write another nonfiction story. I've also thought about Nikola Tesla. Nikola Tesla was one of the most brilliant men of the turn of the century era. Many of our inventions that we have still exist today because of him. He created so many things, And he was one of the greatest inventors of all time, but he ended up on the streets of New York City penniless. And,
right. Tesla is very much an enigma.
Yes, absolutely.
Some of his inventions were wonderful, and some have never ever been able to be reproduced. Was he genuine gifted scientist or illusionist? I've heard that term used against him.
he was actually both. The difference between Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla was that Thomas Edison was a self-taught engineer, but Nikola Tesla, he was a physicist. And now Tesla was gifted because many of his hypotheses he just formulated into his mind, and then they became working apparatuses. Whereas Thomas Edison, on the other hand, he thought of things, then he created prototypes that led to more prototypes until he finally had a working apparatus. And so both men were great to say the least, but both men were also enemies. And so their story, the story between Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla, is a absolutely fascinating story. So if I were to write another, or think of another story, I would definitely want to write about those two gentlemen, how one became rich and how the other one became penniless.
You can put me on the list of people that will want to read the book.
Sure. Well, thank you. I will definitely remember that.
Actually, before I move on, I will make one comment about Edison. I just happened to be reading about him a couple of days ago, and he has this great quote about, "No, I haven't failed. I've just found 10,000 ways to not make something work."
Right, and he had quoted that in front of a press conference, and I believe it was the New York Times and several journalists had their notepads and pencils, and so that was his quote. And actually, that's true. It was a trial and error. So, right, there were no failures. He just learned something new each time, and that was pretty interesting.
Yes, indeed. I've talked to, I don't know how many authors, and most tell the same tale of woe about, the traditional publishing world versus the print-on-demand world. You obviously did not fall into the traps that print-on-demand offers. Either you're the most gifted writer in the past 100 years or so, or you have some great team behind you.
Well, again, when I first stepped into the publishing arena, I had met a publicist here in San Diego, Penny Sansevieri, a wonderful a friend of mine.
I know Penny.
And I had talked to her about publishing. She said, "You know what? There's this company you should think about, and you can get your book out very quickly. And the story that you have with a print-on-demand, I think your book is going to fly." And so I went ahead and went with the print-on-demand. Also, one of the other reasons why I stayed away from the traditional publishing is because I just wanted to get the story out, and I didn't want to have a trail of 50, 60, 70 rejections, and I just would not be able to take that. I wanted to get my story out.
Right.
So that's why I went with print-on-demand.
Actually, I have a friend who's an author, and he has a great little book. It's very amusing. he claims that he spent more time getting rejected by publishing houses than he did to write the entire book. And he has converted his office, or redecorated his office, with all of the rejection letters.
Now that's kind of funny.
Yes. He is a funny guy. He's a stand-up comic, literally. writing is a drug, and a very potent one. But publishing a book is hardly the end of the saga. Now you got to sell it. I was reading about some Boker statistics. They claim that there were almost 300,000 ISBNs issued in the U.S. alone in 2008. How does an author hit the market? How do you get the book in front of eyeballs?
Well, Penny is a phenomenal publicist, and I sat down with Penny, and I said, Penny, what do I need to do? So she had drafted up a marketing plan for me, but then she said, you need to do some work on your own. And my combined efforts, and then mainly getting with Penny, she was able to take my book in many places where I wasn't. Plus, also the primary town that the story takes place is in Kingston, New York. I had sent a letter to the Kingston City Hall, and they were dazzled that the story took place in their town, and so they had put up posters of my book in their town. They did press releases and such. But I would have to say the main way of getting my book out was Penny. Penny was able to again take my book places where I could not. And then also all the responses that I've gotten, you know, everyone says, oh, you got to check out this book. This is an interesting book. And so that's how.
Okay. Let's put in a shameless plug at this point. Where can people find you online? And I'm sure some would-be authors are listening into the program. Where can they find this lady that can help them?
Okay. The Silent Note, they could find The Silent Note at www.silentnotethebook.com. So again, that's silentnotethebook.com. Or they could go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, BooksAMillion.com, and that's where they'll find The Silent Note.
Okay. What about your publicist?
Penny Sansevieri. She's already put out numerous blogs, and she's actually doing the marketing campaign as we speak. That's AuthorMarketingExperts.com. So that's
okay.
www.AuthorMarketingExperts.com.
I've talked to many authors, and most of them pull their characters from real life, sometimes from a single person, but more often a collage from several people. Are your characters based on real people?
No, they're not. They're actually based upon fictitious characters from other stories, and except of course for the historical aspects. But yes, they're fictitious characters from other stories.
Hmm.
I had modeled my characters after them because I was inspired by other works out there.
Okay, I understand that the Silent Note is your first book, and I'd say it's a very, very fine start.
Well, thank you.
I've never talked to a single author that's stopped at one. So what's next?
Next is the sequel to The Silent Note. The story continues where John Wiseman befriends the nurse, Avielsa Thompson, and you know, of course, John Wesman lost his wife, and so this discovery of this box and this piano leads him on a search where he finally meets Elsa Thompson at 106 years old. But Elsa's nurse was a caring woman, just like John's former wife. So the sequel of the story picks up where the silent note left off, and we're going to go into another mystery saga, because there's going to be more secrets of Elsa Thompson in the sequel that's to come.
Ooh, I can't wait. I mean, you've invested a good deal of time in creating your character, John Wiseman. I personally think it's a good idea to capitalize on that investment by using him. When can we expect the book?
I'm trying to target the end of 2009, but if that doesn't work out, it will be in probably the first quarter of 2010.
Great. Unfortunately, our 30 minutes has elapsed way too quickly. So, I mean, this happens with my interviews. I don't know what goes wrong, but somehow we just run out of time.
Right.
Patrick, I really want to thank you for talking to me this afternoon, and I wish you all of the absolute best with The Silent Note, and I'll be watching out for your next book, which I'm sure is going to be a wonderful follow-up.
Well, thank you, Simon, and I really, really appreciate speaking with you, and it was a pleasure to be on your show. And again, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. This is Simon Barrett saying thank you for listening to Blogger News on the radio.